Welcome to The Running Public with Bracken Crocker and Kirk DeWint. It's Tuesday, folks, and you know what that means. Training Tuesday.
We are going to take every rabbit hole, follow tangents, use useless metaphors, get lost in the weeds. This is Training Tuesday.
When you're ready to take your training or racing to the next level, go to therunningpublic.com. We have both monthly subscription training plans, $19.99 a month, and Bracken and I both offer one-on-one customized coaching. Again, go to therunningpublic.com and check out our offerings.
Kirk, you're 2 for 2 on these Masters course records. You got out there again and ripped, and I'm really excited for that in general. And you cut it close again, which just speaks to how stout the record is. But what I'm most interested in is that every time you've had a race, you've told me something like, listen, it wasn't great conditions or it wasn't great blank, but that was everything I had in me. I got everything out of me. And on this one, you told me you had a B-minus day. That we haven't heard from you in a while. You've kind of been the master of getting everything out of yourself. And it sounds like you had a good race, but a tough go of having a good race this weekend. And that's important.
Yeah. I don't know where to start with that one because I'm standing on my, you know, like on my porcelain throne, we'll call it, where like I won the race and set the Masters record. I have literally nothing to complain about. And I'm not. At the same time, it's actually sort of best case scenario getting done with the race because I want to go back and do it again already. It's two days removed, and I feel like I left a good bit out on that course. And so it's sort of in hindsight, it's only 2 days after, but I'm like, okay, I barely set the Masters course record. But there's...
How barely?
Initially, it said 5 seconds. And then they readjusted the timing mats and it recalculated to 17 seconds. So the old Masters record was 2 hours and 19 seconds. And I ran 2 hours and 2 seconds officially. So very close.
Did you know it was that close?
I gave up on it. And I don't. When's the last time you heard me give up on something?
Because I saw your finish line. I saw your finish line video and you weren't kicking.
Well, that was 5:22 pace for the last 0.4 miles at the end of a 17-mile race.
It wasn't slow.
So whether it was kicking or not,
it wasn't slow.
That was it.
I've seen you sprint in.
That was it. That was it.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not complaining about anything. I think I won by 12 minutes. Again, bah humbug, poor me. The strength of field just wasn't there this year, which it's been tighter before, and it became a time trial, which I suspected it could. But truth be told, I just got gun shy a little bit in the middle. I kind of fell asleep. I've been having some sinus issues as this weather gets nicer, and I showed up not feeling great. My heart rate was 5 or so beats a minute higher right out of the gates, and I was like, oh, man. Like, I just... And so I let that get to me a little bit. And so I backed off some of the middle flowy sections, just trying to keep my heart rate in check. And I think slowly but surely, I wasn't leaning into it. I was leaning out from it in a sense. And it's easy to do on the trails on your own. And so suddenly I start doing mental math in my head. And with about 4.5 miles to go, it's all pretty flat. It's a real aggressive for 13 miles and then flat for 4+. And I'm going, I got to run 6:15 or under average right now to get there if my watch is accurate in the foliage and the stuff. You know how that goes. And I barely pulled it off. I had to run, you know, 6 flat through in shoes that I hated. through the finish, and I barely got it. And I'm very, very satisfied that I got myself together towards the end because I was a solo effort. So I'm not complaining, but I didn't race my best. I felt good. I had a good day. My legs were there. My mind was in and out, and I re-engaged just in time. Thank God. So I got it. Got it, Bracken.
When did you realize you had it?
50 meters before the finish line. That's it.
Oof.
Yeah.
Now you know where I'm going right away.
Shoes.
Shoes. I asked you, I said, I have a few questions for you, and you said, suck the endorphin edge. I know you're going to ask about shoes, and that's what I'm going with, and I'm excited for these shoes. I haven't tested them much. I got two easy runs in them, but I love them, and I'm going to roll with them. And after the race, what was your comment to me?
I don't use this word very often, but I hated them. Capital letters.
Hated them. You said, my feet have never felt this bad in my life during a race.
You know, guys, as much as we teach you or try to teach you on this podcast, like, I'm still learning lessons. And that lesson was the shoe felt decent at recovery efforts. I ran two easy long runs in them. I wasn't going for speed on, you know, some sort of aggressive trails. And I never tried running in them fast, nor hard, going downhill in particular, and then ripping and on the flats. And my feet have never slapped the ground and made so much noise. It sounded like somebody banging pots together, I feel like, when my feet hit the ground. And I had a bit of a ankle roll on one of the first descents, which is not on the shoe, which made me a little gun shy too. So I descended very poorly. But my foot, you know, when like you have your feet hurt so bad, I'm like curling my toes in my shoe to like have it hit different in the forefoot. And then I'm running purposefully on the outside of my foot, like to avoid my forefoot hitting the ground anymore. It was to the point where I was like, I wasn't even running like I normally do because my feet hurt so bad. We would hit a flat hard section and I would run on the soft junk off to the side, which is notably slower because my feet couldn't tolerate them hitting the ground anymore. And that started like mile six and I still had 11 to go. And so amongst it all, I'm actually very proud of my effort, but the shoe will be in my toolbox for slow, easy stuff. I am never touching that shoe again for anything that requires speed or output. And I was convinced that was the right shoe for me just 3 days ago. So what do I know? What's your experience with that shoe?
Well, there you go. It's not the shoe for me. I think I keep waiting for version two. More and more, as I become an adult and try to look back on my experiences, I realize that version one of almost nothing is good. It can have flashes, but it's usually an incomplete product, version one of just about anything. I'm an early adopter for some things if I'm super fired up about them, but most of the time I love version two. So that's what I keep thinking about that shoe. I don't love the heel lockdown. I don't love the lateral stability. I think that it's bouncy, stiff, and energetic, but it's not tamed for me yet. So I felt good at like tempo pace in that shoe, but I didn't trust it, which is why I moved it along down the line. But version two I'm excited for.
You've said this to me before, and then we'll move on from the shoe in the race, but how sometimes if you're in the wrong like carbon plated shoe or super shoe, you can almost feel like the plate works against you. Like it almost pushes back instead of propels you forward in a sense. It's not the best way to describe it, but I think the listeners hopefully understand the sentiment. It's how that shoe feels to me. Like I'm landing and it's
how it doesn't want to.
Correct. How the shoe is not designed to land. So that's on me probably. And it's pushing back instead of leaning forward into it. And that's how that shoe feels for me, which is bizarre. I've had that with one other pair of shoes, but this was notable on this one.
What do you remember what that other shoe was?
Yeah, it was the third iteration of the Vaporfly, or the second iteration. I can't access real quick. Once I start running like 5:15 or under on that shoe, it works against me for sure. But I can tempo in that shoe just fine.
So Vaporfly doesn't feel right to my
mine either. So anyways, found that out the hard way.
Yeah. Yeah. The plate has a way it wants to be used. And if it doesn't get used that way, it's almost jerky or mechanical. It's a jarring blow to your legs because it doesn't deform or flex. It just does what it's going to do, regardless of what you want it to do. So when a shoe aligns with your stride, like the Alpha for us, it feels very synergistic. Oh,
it's beautiful.
But when it doesn't, it's a jarring feeling.
Yeah. So I'm still making mistakes, apparently, but I am not complaining, and I'm also hungry to go back next year. It was my second fastest time on the course that I've ever run So I can't complain about that, but I know I honestly had minutes in me, and I ran hard. I had 174 beat a minute average for that race. Like, that is higher than any other year previous. It got to 82 degrees on Saturday here, so it was a hot one, which may have affected my ability to push, but
it was hot.
It got warm, dude. But anyways, record, awesome. I'm super pumped to have it, barely. I'd rather be on that side of it than the other. And the best thing about it is I still want to go back and do it again, which is good, because the other course, Afton, in which I have the Masters course record, I feel really solid about that, and I'm wondering if there's room to go there. Whereas this one I just got, I still feel like there's time to chip away. So, and so many people reached out afterwards. I know it's just a measly trail race. It's a good showing, but it's a Midwest trail race. Unimportant in the grand scheme of things, but so many people reached out to say congrats or wish me luck. I felt like my athletes were my coach this weekend with so many messages and good lucks and good jobs. Felt like I was the athlete and they were the coach. So thank you for everybody supporting me in my little Midwest trail race. It meant a lot. So that's it. Now I'm going to take a week down, Bracken. I'm going to try not to run all week. I'm going to take a hard reset and then push for some speed here through the fall, which is going to be fun. So that's my plan.
I like it. Let's just say it right here, right now. Assuming health, I will race that race with you next year.
I would love that. That'd be great. You're talking Zumbro, the one I just ran.
That's a goal of mine is correct. A goal of mine is to get to more of these and particular races that you are at, particularly races you are
at. Hey, and if you pick something out down there, let me know. And then maybe I'll come down as well. I think there's something to say about getting into a race. As hard as you train and as calculated as training becomes these days, I'm going to hit my heart rate here and sit there. I'm going to aim for this exact pacing and all of that. When you get on the trails and it just becomes all that goes out the window, and you just realize like effort, like what is 174 beats a minute for 2 hours going to do to me, like metabolically, systemically, fitness wise? Like, these are just needle movers. Yeah, they knock you down in the short term, but like they break through ceilings in particular with fitness that like I don't think you can duplicate in training. I honestly do not think you can duplicate it in any way. I could not do that effort on my own. I highly doubt it. And so even if it's for those things where they like it just breaks through to the next level because the situation forces such an effort out of your body, there you have no choice but to get better after you're recovered and adapted. And so I think jumping into these big things are just like, they just shove you down the road further on the fitness front eventually. So that's why you should do them amongst anything else.
Yeah. Someone asked me this weekend what workout had me feeling the most prepared for like a 2 hour race. And I was going back and forth. And then I thought, you know what? The best I ever felt for 2 hours was when I was meeting up with John DeWitt once a week and running like 10 to 13 miles hard. There's something about getting out, not totally sure how far you're going to go. It's going to be at least an hour, but might be 70 minutes, might be 80, but that it's just going to get hard and you're just going to have to not be totally sure if you can hang on or not. Because John's a, what, 218 marathoner, 217 marathoner. Quick. And so he would do his medium long run or just a regular run and I would hang on for tempo day. And I did that for like 6 or 7 weeks straight one fall. And I remember thinking I should just get into a Spartan Beast race or a 10 miler or a 10K. I just feel so strong right now. And that trail effort is the same kind of thing. Just going out there and having to modulate your effort, but hang on. Yep. It's just powerful. It's not the best single workout you can do, but in terms of just making you feel like in control of your engine, there's something there.
I think it has to do, and then we need to get into today's episode, but I think it has to do with, especially on the trails for me, or maybe running with somebody who's faster than you, like John, who's faster than most people. Mm-hmm. On the trail, I find I'm running hard. I'm at 100. I'm running hard. And then you hit a 350-foot climb, and your heart rate's spiking at 182 up that climb, and it tipped you over. Without you even wanting it to, you've crossed the line because the race just demanded. If you kept your mental effort the same while climbing, the heart rate just goes with it. And suddenly you've tipped over and now you're forced to, you have an hour left in the race and you're forced into that dark place without calculating anything, without worrying about your pace, without even knowing how far into the race you are or what you have left. And you're like, I just rode at 180 plus beats a minute for 6 minutes. Like, what is that going to do to me? Well, it's going to cause you to suffer and hang on. And when you sit in that place, just like with running with John, when you cook a little too hot too early and then have to hang on, not that I'm condoning it, but it does shake the system. Does it not?
It does. It absolutely does. And then you become calm at that.
Yeah. Become calm, become familiar with it. Being familiar with that feeling is a dangerous thing for who you're racing. Not shying away.
We talk a lot about when you're pacing, you have to know, can I keep this forever or not? Yes or no, or I'm not sure. And early on, I'm not sure is very scary. And eventually, I'm not sure is kind of exciting.
Yeah.
And the only difference between those two is how much time you've spent in that I'm not sure area.
Yeah. Spent a lot of time in that recently. Well, let's do this. So thanks for asking about my race. We don't need to dwell on it. We want to put an end cap to our How to Run Your Best episode. And this is actually your idea, the way to end cap this. And as a preface, I'll let you introduce this. For you hybrid athletes who listen, we are actually not going to do a How to Run Your Best hybrid, we decided, in this series. We're going to do a standalone. We're going to pay it its lip service, but not in this series. This is our end cap episode to the How to Run Your Best blank series. So why don't you kick it off, Bracken?
Yeah, and I'll follow up on that first. And that is that the way to run your best mile or 5K or marathon or ultra is relatively similar person to person. Yeah, you might have to do longer intervals versus shorter intervals, but the type of engine work you have to do is kind of all the same. In the hybrid world, it's so specific to you. Yes, there are rules you have to follow, but a runner preparing for HYROX is not the same as a CrossFitter preparing for HYROX. And so we can't confidently just say you can run your best HYROX or Decafit by doing blank, because you might not be able to. But we know that if you followed our outline for the previous episodes, you could, if you put the work in, run your best. And we're just not comfortable putting that out there for hybrid. So we are going to talk probably next Tuesday about how we would train for hybrid, but it can't fall under the umbrella of how to do your best, because we don't know you as an athlete and it might be not what you need.
Yeah, there's some universal truths we still believe when it comes to hybrid training and racing. And then there's universal nuances and deviations from center in all directions based on your background, your skill set, your body weight and height, your pure structure and size, your strengths and weaknesses. So I think we'll break all that down in like its own thing is what I don't think we can put one umbrella over
for
it.
Sure.
We could. I mean, we could do it and we could make it work, but we're not going to, I guess. So go ahead. Introduce today. I'm excited about this one.
Yeah. All right. So today is, for all the people listening who thought it'd be cool to run my best mile, but I'm not going to put 9 weeks into it. It'd be cool to run my best marathon. I'm not putting 16 weeks into it. This is for you. How to run your best everything. So this is the giant, to use a term that we just used improperly, hybrid training system, where you're going to train your engine and your body to be able to run your best anything at the drop of a hat. We're going to say within, what do we want to say, 3 weeks?
Sure.
Should we give us that? A 3 to 6 week pivot? Yeah. 3 to 6 weeks. You are 3 to 6 weeks away from your lifetime or darn near it best at any distance, 1 mile through, let's call it 50 miles. How do we do that? That's today.
Yeah. And I think that this episode speaks to the majority of our listeners. I would have to believe. If you break down the
speaks to us
for sure. If you break down the percentage of your athletes that are this, they want to do it all or at least multiple things. They're not a specialist. I'm going to say 75% of the athletes I work with are dabbling in multiple arenas. How about yours? Mm-hmm.
As you were asking it, I was going to say 60% are focused on all things, 40 on one thing. But then as you said, dabbling in multiple arenas, it's like 90.
Yeah, like
95. Even the people that have their specific thing, they're always like, you know what, along the way, I am going to do this as well.
Right. Yeah. So anyways, I think, and I think even it speaks to what you have going this year. It speaks to me running two-hour trail races, mm-hmm. yet running to run 15 minutes on flat ground on a 5K. Those are vastly different things. They all come to the same centerpiece, which we'll probably get to. But nonetheless, I just hope, I think that yes. this is going to speak to a number of people. So where do you want to start with this conversation?
I want to start with the theory, and then I want to talk about the execution.
Okay. I'm listening.
Does that yeah. work? All right. So my general theory on how to be a jack of all trades, master of almost all of them, but none of them, but 3 to 6 weeks away from mastering one of them, is that you have to choose two things. You have to choose, where do I put the majority of my training and where can I get away with the minimum effective dose? I think right off the bat, you have to choose that. And so my personal perspective on almost every type of athlete out there is you need to put most of your training in that 60 to 90 minute race basket. If you go right in around hour race basket, and you put the majority of your training there, and then you move to the poles, to the far ends of the spectrum, and you do minimum effective speed dose and minimum effective dose of ultra, that keeps you right where you want to be. And I can spend as long as we want breaking down that concept, but that's where I start. We're going to run as fast as we'd ever need to, but as infrequently as we can get away with, or as frequently as we can handle, but with the smallest amount of volume as we can get away with. And the true long run and ultra specific work, as infrequently as we can get away with, so we can put the vast majority of our volume and energy in that 10K to half marathon basket.
So 60 minute race effort, regardless of terrain, give or take, you believe, let's just say you can race down from there, you can race up from there. I agree with you very much.
Yes.
And for example, if you take somebody who's a world-class half marathoner, they're running about an hour just over these days, which is incredible, right? If you see somebody who's running 60 minutes for a half marathon and they go toe the start line at a 5K 2 weeks later, what are you thinking? Oh, crap. I'm in trouble. And you see that person show up to the marathon 4 months later, what do you think? Oh, crap. I'm in trouble.
This could be interesting.
Right. With the right mix yep. of pieces. So I think that centerpiece of 60 minutes is perfect. I think the main question that people are going to shoot to right away, and I guess let's just get into the weeds right now. When you say minimum effective dose, right away people are going to say, okay, so how often is a minimal effective dose of all the skill sets I want, right? How often do I need to touch things? Because let's say 60-minute type race work is going to be the default, right? We're going to go back to that sort of – that's going to be our centerpiece of our decisions we make in training. But the other ones, I want to race a mile, but I also have a marathon on my books or a trail, whatever. What's the minimum effective dose? How do you decide on that?
Yep. Oh, I mean, even this answer, right? This could be our whole Training Tuesday.
Correct.
But because we're trying to keep this palatable and actionable for the every man and every woman, I would say that at least – every week, one time, you have to run mile pace or faster one time per week. That to me is the minimum effective dose to be able to be 3 to 6 weeks away from a mile adult life PR. Now, how that looks to me could be, should be skill based, not engine based. And what I mean by that is we're not trying to hurt during the workout or get a great workout. We're trying to be mechanically competent, smooth, efficient, and comfortable running mile pace or faster. That's the only purpose of your weekly work. And we can get into how often should we then actually incorporate it into a real workout to stay on top of the engine side. But I would focus, the minimum dose means skill work to me. And so once, you could do it twice a week if you wanted, but at least once per week, you have to practice the skill of running your mile pace or faster.
And to just hone in on that a little more, maybe you could run a recovery run and finish with 6x30 seconds at mile pace or faster, and that would Perfect. Cover it. I think this is what we should do.
Yep.
I think we should back out of this weed, and I think maybe we should look at the big picture first and then because I don't want to trap ourselves too early. So how about this?
Okay.
How about we set up a week in which, so let's just lay it out. You want to do it all, okay? Let's say you have some shorter races on your calendar. Let's call them 5Ks or miles. You also have a local trail race that appeals to you that could be up to a 50K. You have some obstacle course races in there. You have a few local road or trail races in between, but you're covering the gamut in your year. And they're all within 3 months. You got a 5K, and then 2.5 months later, you got a 50K on your local trail that you just want to scratch that itch. So let's cover the spectrum. So if you're going to step back and look at like the week as a whole, how do you make your training decisions? What is that? What should that look like? I have some pretty concrete thoughts. I'll let you kick it off. But I think maybe we take that step back first so we can zoom in as we go.
Okay. Well, I'm going to cloud it right away by saying this, like I talked about for Ultra and everything, this is the time for the 9 to 10 day cycle. If you want to do it all, that 9 to 10 day rolling cycle is just perfect for this. But for the sake of this, we're not going to. So for me, it's an A week and a B week.
Yep.
Now, let's say we're the Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday type runner, where Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday are going to be relatively harder efforts. Every single Tuesday, regardless of week, I'm working on that 60-minute engine, which generally means threshold work. Intervals from 3 to 15 minutes, who cares? I'm probably going to stick around that 5 plus or minus a few minutes range, but every Tuesday I'm doing that. In A week, I'm also doing that again on Saturday. So A week is pure engine work. Tuesday, Saturday, I'm doing threshold work. Midweek is a midweek long run. And I'm building that out to be the longest version of a midweek long run I can sustain for my A week. Starting with 70 minutes, building it up, probably wanting to get to the point where I could run 90 minutes each week because I still have to keep an eye on longer work. And then my B week, I'm still hitting Tuesday threshold, but now my long run is ultra specific, which is going to be how quick can I make work in there while still being ultra specific? So longer threshold work in amongst 2 to 3 hour run. And then midweek, instead of a midweek long run, I'm doing some speed play. I'm doing my skill work. Mm. Maybe it's a midweek long run that starts or finishes or in the middle has some 200s or 150s or something like that. But my skill of speed is happening in the middle of the week there. And I have an A week and a B week. A week, B week, A week, B week. And that second B week is probably a big ultra swing. So it alternates between quality ultra run and big time on feet. And I'm keeping that all year round until I get 3 to 6 weeks away from an important race.
Do you think these big swings every other week? So basically every 4 weeks, you're swinging pretty hard on the ultra front.
Every 4th week is
big. Right. But every other week, you're going to have a true long run. And every other week, you're going to have some sort of quality shorter session in there, which we've talked about throughout these past few weeks. So none of this should be new to you guys in that sense. My question is, at what point do you believe these ultra efforts, let's say the ultra is just a scratch and itch, right? You have to respect your longest race distance regardless. That's the thing. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
But at what point does it take away from your top end ability to run fast? Do you believe going out for 3 hour long runs every other weekend is actually going to negatively impact your ability to run high turnover work in a 5K? I think some people be like, do I really need to, or would that take away? Do you have an opinion on that at all?
Yeah, my opinion is that most of us aren't fast enough to need to worry about that. I think if you're trying to run sub 13 in a 5K, there's a real argument to be made. But I don't believe in the physiological damage it's going to do to you.
Right.
From like a stride. I don't think it's going to dull your slow twitch or your fast twitch enough that you're going to notice it. I think it's going to fatigue you to the point where you can't do your next quality run well enough. And then you won't get enough out of it. So with that long run, I think that it's the minimum distance you can consider ultra distance is how you balance that. So if it's 2.5 to 3.5 hours gets you that ultra feeling, you do 2.5 to start with and you move up over time, or you alternate. Once a month, it's 2.5. The other month, it's 3.5. It gives you more time to play with the individual workouts in between. But no, I personally don't believe that running 2 to 3 hours or even 3 hours every other weekend will negatively impact the regular everyday Joe's ability to run their 5K PR.
Well, I'm certainly not the gold standard when it comes to this at all, but you can vouch for me here, because when you came out for my wedding, I was still doing 2 hour long runs, and I had a 5K, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, that I cared about running fast and worked. I mean, it felt pretty good. So yep. I saw the benefit of keeping it in there, and I didn't have ultras on my schedule. I had nothing else. I was still choosing to, I think that stay power bleeds down. Yeah. You know where mine goes? So I posed the question to you, like, zoom out, take a look at the week, the A week, B week, couldn't agree more. Your athletes are on a similar plan. I think mine typically are as well. The ones who want to do everything. I go right to terrain. Mm-hmm. Like, as much as we want to think about, mm-hmm. you know, moving the puzzle pieces and the chess pieces around, I think as much as, like, I just said, you have to respect your longest race distance, like the ultra, if you're going to do something long, you got to be ready for that. At the same time, if you're going to do anything on terrain, hills in particular, you have to respect that. You start waffling over training decisions, hill work translates to flat ground for everybody. It's also strength work in disguise while using the run motion. So prioritize the grossest, nastiest terrain you will be encountering throughout your season and make sure that is a frequent stimulus. Mm-hmm. You'll want to run fast and flat for a 5K? Great. Those hill repeats on your nasty technical trail that get your heart rate to 180 and your lungs and glutes burning? Yeah, that's going to help you race down, race flat, race fast. So right away, I say, that's a frequent stimulus. You should always go back to like the 60-minute, let's say, race distance. I think if you're running trails that have vert, even if you have flat and fast stuff you care about, you got to say, where am I getting in my technical trail hill running? Has to be bumped way up. It cannot be a by the way. You can't fake it. I think you can fake gravity. Nope. Gravity works for you on flat ground, especially if you have nice biomechanics. It does not work that way climbing. Even some of the best flat landers lose a large percentage of their ability to run uphill if they're not well-versed. So right away, I think your longest distance takes a priority in your long-run training decisions, and then your nastiest terrain you'll be encountering, mainly hill work, hill-type terrain, needs to rise to the top as well with like all of your training decisions. So that's where my mind first goes when we zoom out.
I love it. And let's apply that to that theoretical A week, B week schedule I gave. Yeah. Every single Saturday, I'm on terrain, either vert or technical. Every single Saturday. Even if it's the A week where I'm doing threshold work on Saturday, it's on race terrain.
Can I pick a hole in this real quick?
And just like it's important.
I just want to yes, bug you right away. What about, because I had this conversation with somebody recently. You have a road marathon. What do you think? Still? Mm-hmm. Who cares? Get off the roads and that's okay. Get on the terrain. Because you have terrain races coming up, what do you think?
Well, what I was going to say is that balancing out the other way is important too. If you want to run a mile or a 5K fast, it's not going to be on the trail. And a marathon's the same way. And so every single Tuesday session I'm doing is on the hardest, smoothest terrain I'll ever run. So Tuesdays are hardest, smoothest. Saturdays typically are steepest, nastiest. And then Thursday splits the difference. Thursday is for whatever is coming next. So since every other Thursday is medium long run, that medium long run is happening on the terrain that I'm going to be doing in my next race. So if it's a marathon or a half marathon, that I'm trying to get 75 minutes pounding on the road. In the next week when I do my speed work, that's track or road. If I'm going towards an ultra, that's going on more vert on that midweek long run. And then half of each volume is the other one, half to two thirds. So for a road marathon, half to two-thirds of that volume is on the road now. If it's ultra, two-thirds of that volume is happening on the trails. And when I say volume, I mean my easy in-between days. As you get closer to the marathon, yeah, those ultra workouts probably have to start shifting over, or you keep those off and your A-week Saturdays have to start shifting over. But for the beginning of it, if I don't have a race of emphasis yet, Tuesday is super clean and hard. Saturday is super hilly and nasty and or nasty.
I can get on board with that. And not that we need to compare ourselves to the pros, because they're a different breed of human, built differently, built lighter than most of us, built a little more efficient than most of us, mm-hmm. all of that. Even those who are somewhat gifted, well, very gifted on the performance and biomechanic and injury front, you don't get as good as these pros without having almost all three of those cards in your deck, still go run trails, crushed gravel, dirt on a lot of their efforts because they see the value in that. Mm-hmm. And they're racing on the tracks. They're racing on the roads. a lot of times in what you call their off season, and even when they're transitioning into race season, they'll go tempo on a hard packed dirt like service road, or they will go crush gravel loops until it gets down to that, like, okay, now we're on the track for these sessions because we're racing on the track. And they sometimes wait till the last 3 to 6 weeks to dial in on that too. So if we were to emulate what they're doing, it still says, you're right. It says, sure, go ahead. And then maybe 6 weeks out from your marathon or your ultra, then it's all in on the specific terrain for some of those events, but just keeping all the other arrows in your quiver until then so that you can return to them as soon as your marathon's done or your ultra's done. You can go back to all the other components. So I think 3 to 6, probably a month-ish is probably enough to then be like, okay, I'm going to leave other components behind and go all in on my next thing before I then focus on something different after that. So, okay, so.
Yeah, and even looking at the pros, let's say Ryan Hall, who set the American record in the marathon, was famous for his dirt road altitude 10-mile tempo runs.
Mm-hmm.
Galen Rupp, who's probably the greatest distance runner we've seen in our lifetime in the United States, is famous for, he's either on the road or track for speed work, or he is on the trails or grass or Alter G treadmill or his own treadmill for everything else. They just value staying healthy and reducing pounding slightly until it's time to pound.
I saw a video of Ryan Hall like a couple of weeks ago running fast and looking a little lighter and smoother on the treadmill. Did you pick? It got forced to me on like. Did you see that? Wonder what that guy's up to. Looked like he was caring about his running for a little bit. I mean, he's got to be 40 now, right? So,
interesting.
I can't imagine he's chasing anything. But anyway, still looked smooth. Still had those long legs working for him. And I will also say, in our next generation, Galen Rupp will just be one of. He'll be number 10 on the list of the greatest we've seen in U.S. distance running history because the crop is unbelievable right now. It's crazy. Just watching the Brian Clay Invitational.
Even like Grant Fisher has already caught him time-wise. He's already there.
Nico Young has run faster in the 10K, I think, right? Than Galen Rupp's American record?
No, Rupp had like 26:44.
Oh, he ran 44. Okay, close.
I don't think he caught his 10K.
Close, 8 seconds or something. Regardless.
Yeah, but they're already almost there.
Freaking wild.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Okay, so then talking about making quality session training decisions, if you're all over the map, where do we start? Like we've shoved down your throat, threshold is key. Anywhere you look on the internet, on podcasts, listening to coaches, threshold, you're probably sick of hearing the word, right? But it is the centerpiece, no matter what, of all of these distances. So we understand there's going to be threshold type work in here. And I think this is where choosing your terrain starts to make a little bit of a difference. Now, you talk your A beacon or A week and B week. Does that mean like it's track Tuesday, but now it's not? It's trail Tuesday every other week? Or is it like, how do we start to diverge there? What are your thoughts on like what I would call your pinnacle quality session each week? Like your one, you know, the one that jumps out at you on the map, that session. What do you do with that session?
You choose the one that makes you happy. And you choose the one that makes you that matches up with the most typical race you run. So for me, I can run that session on the treadmill. I can run it on the roads. I can run it on the trails, but I'm the happiest on the trails. And I'm most likely to run a trail race if it's a race longer than 30 minutes. It's probably on a trail, unless it's something like a Hyrox. And so throughout my weeks, every other week, treadmill, trail, that's fine for me. Because the purpose of all this is to be sustainable long term. And if we do believe engine is engine, I really don't think it matters where you do your quality work, except the more dialed in you want to be to pace and exertion, the more it matters to do it on a clean surface at least once a week so you can track everything really specifically. But again, race specificity always wins out eventually. So from a standpoint of just how I progress, one of my threshold sessions will always be clean. And by clean, I mean I'm not worrying about my feet. I'm stepping on smooth ground. I'm not worrying about hills. I'm just running like a metronome. And then the other one is where I pair that to terrain. So pretty much all year, I think I would still do one session clean, one session dirty, one session clean, one session dirty. And then as soon as I get a whiff of my next race, that second session mirrors whatever the race is going to be, as does the first.
Yeah, that makes sense. How far out does it matter anymore? Meaning, like, when are you in the lot, like that lost period of time where like anything you do is going to take away from tomorrow, sort of thing? Like, at what point is it like, oh, my race is in 2 weeks, so I'm going to go hurry up and get on race specific terrain now? Like, is that better than nothing? Maybe. Are you kind of spinning your wheels at this point? You get what I'm getting at here? Yeah. At what point, like, so you don't want to cut it too close is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Once I'm 10 days out, I don't think I'm getting any better for race day other than confidence or strategy. So 3 weeks out, 2 weeks out, that's my big money-making time to make last-minute adjustments. But if we followed the premise of touching upon everything always, so we've had our dose of speed throughout, we can crank into speed without having to relearn how to do it. If we've been running some technical or some hill all throughout, we don't have to relearn it. If we've been running road at least once per week, we don't have to relearn how to pound. So the transition is easier the longer you strung together weeks of doing the bare minimum, like that minimum effective dose of all things, and a maximum tolerable dose of the engine work. So the more consistent you are at checking every box, the less time you have to spend checking any one particular box before a race.
Yeah. And I think the thing about running on clean terrain you were mentioning just a few minutes ago is like, if you really care, like I really want to set a lifetime PR in my 5K this year or something like that, although I have these other things along the way, it's the one exception where I think you need to pay more service to that type of running. Like the faster the race gets that you care about, like 5 minute intervals would be great on the trail and 5 minute intervals flat would be great for your system. But I don't know if like 5 minutes on really aggressive trails is going to translate as nicely to something that needs to be just on point efficient for like a 5K flat, right? So what I'm getting at is like, if you really care about some of these shorter races on clean terrain, the track, the road, you may have to make some more of those training decisions to run on what you call clean terrain so you can get that efficiency piece down, just get comfortable running that fast, that long. Whereas like, if you really care about the longer stuff, screw it. Like you can go hit that efficiency work once in a while, but then I would prioritize the other end. Engine work. Engine work shows through in the long stuff no matter what. I really feel like that. I feel like engine has to be paired with biomechanical work on the short end of the racing scale more than the long end. You agree with that?
I agree with that. Yeah, I do. And so if you're looking to build this, go back and listen to each episode, but focus on that 5K and marathon episode because the quality work we're talking about there before we start sharpening is the quality work that's going to build your Tuesday, Saturday throughout the vast majority of this training. Right. And then you find a mile workout or two that you really like, and you pretty much just cut it in half. And you can dose that in throughout the week or cut it into thirds and dose that in once a week. Maybe instead of doing 10 by 3 minutes, you do 3 by 400 at mile pace and then 8 by 3 minutes after that.
Yeah.
That's your workout for the week. So it's just a dose. It's just a touch. It's not supposed to make you way better. It's just supposed to make you cleaner at that skill. And then the ultra work, you think about the workouts we talked about doing and you do one every other week. So that's the easy way to set it up, but I think we should talk about what the minimum effective dose really looks like for speed work and long ultra work. Because I think everyone gets by this point, get 30 to 40 minutes of threshold in work intervals twice per week, every week in your set. But how do we dose in the really long and the really short? Like, what's the time frame, the least we can get away with, and how should it look?
Well, you tried to get us into the speed camp right when we started, and then I backed us out of that. So it's time I think it is time now we get to that. And I think the other end of the spectrum, the ultra, is we got to pay it that lip service as well. So I guess I'll kick it off. And I know you have concrete thoughts on this. And we've touched on all this stuff, like I feel like intermittently in past episodes, right? You could piece all this together if you want to listen to a bunch of the stuff we've done, but not in one concise space, maybe. I would say if you care, like truly care, like I'm doing it all, but maybe I want the speeds. Let's talk the speed side first. Like I care a little more, like on paper, I want to see that 5K go down or something. I think, as you mentioned, you still need to touch mile pacing as an afterthought once, let's say, A week, and then once in B week, you have an entire mm-hmm. session dedicated to the speed at pace or over speed training of your shorter race. So I think 1 week is maintenance. Your midweek long run, you add in your 30-second hard stuff at or faster than, you know, goal race pace or mile pace. And then the following week, you're like, okay, I'm going to give this one what it deserves, and I'm going to fully dedicate my session to 5K pace work or faster, for example. And you can go every other week like that, touching mm-hmm. it always, but only every other week paying complete service to that speed side of things. What do you think there?
I agree. And when we say an afterthought, we mean like do your threshold work and finish up with 4x200.
Yes.
At 800 meter race pace. Or do an easy run and finish it with, I don't know, like you said earlier, 3 or 4 by 30 seconds at mile pace. Or in do your medium long run, do a 25-minute run and then run 6x400 at mile pace and then do another 45-minute run. So that is something you could do every week. And then every other week, do a bigger version of that. Instead of one of your threshold runs, or instead of your midweek long run, or at the start of your long run, or the day before your easy long run, find a spot in there where you're fresh enough to move hard, but you can still do more afterwards. And that's the great thing about mile pace work or 5Ks. You can always just go run an hour afterwards. Take 10 minutes after.
Yeah.
Take a gel. Drink some water. Stretch out for a bit. And then put your trainers on and just go run an easy hour. You get done and you think, oh, that's it for the day. And then 10 minutes later, you're like, all right, I can do whatever.
Yeah, and not to detract too much, then we'll get to the ultra. But like, I also think if you're the person who wants to do it all, and really I fall in this boat other than like I'm not chasing hybrid or obstacle course racing right now, but the terrain I run on is very different. The distances are going to be very different. I think if you're going to stay on a 7-day schedule, and I agree with you, by the way, the 9-day schedule is money. 9 or 10-day cycle is money for this. I think if you're trying to do it all, you're on a 7-day schedule like most of you are, you become a really prime candidate for like the twice a week quality session, followed by a fatigued long run, alternating terrain every other week. Like, okay, my Tuesday quality session is going to be dedicated to one type of race and terrain. My Friday quality session will be dedicated to the other type of race, terrain, duration. And then one Saturday, I go out for an easy long run on the trails. The next Saturday, I go out for an easy long run on the roads or something like that. You can probably squeeze it into a 7-day, but I think it would fit really nicely to just shift to the two quality sessions and then leave the long run be and alternate terrain. I think that also would work. It just keeps coming to mind. It's what I've been doing, and I feel like I've built really good fitness. One day is for going flat and fast. One day is for going up and down, right? Like, and then the long run falls where it does. So I think that's also a good option for those of you. I mean, you got to be durable and you got to be able to fit it into your schedule, and it can be, you know, make for some grindy long runs, as I found out. Like, every long run after a quality session can make for quite a slog on the weekends, but you also get everything in. So I just want to wedge that point in there as well.
Yeah, I like that. For the long run, every other week's enough. Every third week might work as well for going ultra specific. Yep. And it really depends how much do you want to be ready for an ultra. But where my like balance of power lies there is that if you want to drop the frequency of your long run, you have to raise your weekly running volume. And if you want to over rely on the real long run 3 to 4 hours every week or every other, then you can drop your weekly volume a little bit. Because for the person who's not trying to run their best ultra, just a pretty darn good one, but I really want to do the other stuff well, you can get by on volume and or long run. You don't necessarily have to crush both. And so you get to play around with that as well. Maybe my B week, I lower my volume a little bit down and I crank up the long run a bit. You don't have to do both all the time.
That every 3 week thing is so interesting to me. It's like just long enough where you start to like feel like you're out of touch or you're losing fitness or whatever. Mm-hmm. The Science of Ultra podcast, which they don't make new episodes anymore. I think they stopped a few years back and they really got nerdy on stuff. But when they had their exercise physiologist on talking about maintaining like fitness, metabolic fitness, aerobic capacity, VO2 max even, they were using that 20-day marker as 20-day, 3-week marker a lot. 20 days.
very present.
Yeah, like, hey, if you go for a long run every 3 weeks, like a true long run, like technically that should be enough according to literal studies and literal science of your top end potential. Now, what does your confidence do there? What does your resistance to impact do in 3 weeks if you're not hitting that stuff? But like science shows, like something as little, they were saying something even as little as like 3 miles or 30 minutes of easy running 3 times a week for 3 weeks, you're still maintaining almost everything as far as measurable performance, like output by the body goes after big training blocks, which is mind blowing. Now, psychologically, we feel like we lose things so quickly, and I'm in that camp. I think everybody is. If you didn't go for a long run for 3 weeks, you'd feel like you're definitely selling yourself short. But just peace of mind there. That was a very interesting listen on that episode back in the day. So I think that every 3 weeks, like there might be a, you know, you could ramp it up. Week one, you could go real hard, like threshold interval long run of like 90 minutes. Week two, you could go do longer threshold intervals and get to 2 hours. And then week three, you could go to 3 hours and of steady long run. You could start the cycle over. Like, yeah. Would that be just as effective? Probably, right?
Well, you just walked me right up to the final way to do this, in my opinion.
Talk to me.
And that's the 3 week microcycle. You do 2 weeks of engine building, 1 week of skill and durability, and then you reset. So for you and I, it would look something like
A week, B week.
So threshold, threshold, medium, long, threshold, threshold, medium, long, speed, speed, super long. Mm. So you have 2 weeks where you're just doing the best possible engine work you can do, and you're doing it on your different terrain, and you're just doing lip service to hill work and long runs, and then in lip service to speed. Lip service, just extended strides or little speed sprinkles. And then that third week, you're running a mile pace workout twice that week and an ultra workout.
Yeah.
And then you're back to it again. And that's a really good run your everything schedule. It also pairs well, and we don't need to go far into this, but with OCR hybrid. Pure engine work, big swing that's going to move the needle with one of those other modalities.
I think I've seen hybrid stud Ryan Kent post about that cycle or type of training, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Yeah, and it still balances the scales nicely.
Volume weeks, hybrid weeks. Yeah. In 20 days, you're right. That 20-day time frame, it just keeps – it's very prevalent in the fitness world. You see it with eccentric damage, that with downhill damage, eccentric stress on the muscles. It's about a 20-day cycle of its effectiveness in your body from when you recover from it and then have your super compensation to when that super compensation period in your body starts to peter off. It's about 20 days. Same thing with long runs. So if you add that in, having that in your third week will always keep you in that phase where you don't feel super good at it, and it leaves you pretty trashed after, which gets you the super compensation of it. If you get too much in the rhythm of the long run and you stop fearing it and stop looking forward to it, you're in the rhythm of doing it, but you're never like the next day feeling I got better. And from a mental standpoint, feeling like I got better, because that really got to me. That's important to an athlete. And so that every third week, really specific ultra run or really specific speed work that leaves you just not feeling super confident on it, those are those super compensation moments for your body physiologically.
Yeah. And usually on something like that, you'll start to like almost crave it or feel like, I need this. I need this again. Like it comes back around, that third week comes around. You're like, I can tell I need to access these faster paces, right? I need a long run. I can tell that's what I need next. Or it almost feels novel when you do a cycle like that, where that third week hits and you're like, I'm just looking forward to something different. And it keeps you engaged, oddly enough, even if it's just for that.
Yeah. It also gives you more confidence in your midweek long runs on the other weeks. Or I'm just going 75 to 90 minutes, knowing you have the big run looming, you get to trust in the medium long run a little bit more. All right, I'm just going to roll through this terrain smoothly, steadily. I don't have to beat myself up today. And I can focus on hitting my quality workouts this week because this is a maintenance long run. I don't have to try to eke extra out of this and then play the recovery game. I know my big one's waiting and looming. And so I don't need to read too far into this medium long run.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wanted to, as we're looking at sort of putting a bow tie on all of this, I think people are going to okay, give me some concrete. Like, how many miles a week? Like, what time on foot over the weekend? Like, just some, like, try to give them some real tangibles here. You know, I'll start it off, you know, what did we say for the ultra? Somewhere in that, like, 9 to 12 hours a week, roughly.
9 to 12.
On foot, that was last week. You know, for this person, I think if it's done right, 6 to 8, 6 to 9 maybe. 6 is on the low end, but it can be done. I've done it. 7 to 9 maybe, we're getting closer. But total time on foot.
7 to 9 is my answer.
Does that feel better to you? 6 feels a little short. Yeah.
I love it.
7 to 9 total hours of time on foot. What you're missing there is maybe like all that layered in volume during the week that you get when you're ultra training, but you still have the big swings on the weekend, like Bracken said. So it doesn't matter if you have a lot of things, go away from mileage. You know, if you're racing on varied terrain and you're chasing vert, forget about mileage. Like, that's sort of something you got to let go of, because you could have a single week that's 7 hours and 35 miles if you have a big mountain race coming up, but you put in 10,000 feet of vert. And the very next week when you shift to flat, you could put in 55 miles, but way less vert, and put in the same amount. And so shifting to like a time focus for sure. So that sweet spot there. I guess I'll start with that and then see if you have anything you want to add to that total time stuff or thoughts on that.
I like it. And that's 7979 or 779779 for hours of training per week. You can set it like that. It doesn't have to be 9 on the nose every week. Because if you're choosing to train like this, you're kind of announcing, I don't want to be the world champ at anything. Which, if we then follow that line of thinking, it's, I want to enjoy what I'm doing. I have a lot of interests, and this can't fully take over my life. Which means you choose the volume that's most sustainable early on. You don't have to try anything crazy because you're trying to do it all. And when you're trying to do it all and you have multiple pieces, you need to be looking forward to the training and you need to trust the training and you need to be able to modulate it over the course of the season. You can't burn out early on this or you're never going to get to all the races you wanted to do. If you're trying to run your best one thing, sometimes you need to push the envelope and finding the perfect amount. But with this, give yourself time. This is for people who enjoy running and we want to keep it that way. So I don't think there's this magic amount that we must hit. It's consistency. We got to hit it week in and week out.
I will add to that, there's probably a very large sector of our listeners sitting there thinking like, I do it all and I'm not even close to 7 to 9 hours. Like, I'm just not. I don't make enough time in the week or whatever. And that's okay. Again, we are telling you how to run your best, like your best. Like, go out there and kill it all. Like, could you kill it all? Possibly. However, if you're in the camp where it's like, I haven't hit a 7-hour training week in as long as I remember, and I have 3 ultras on my schedule this year, like, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. That long run just priority just keeps shifting to the top for you then. That's fine. Minimal volume during the week. It's just that deck gets shuffled, so that long run becomes more of a priority. So sure, you're running 5 hours a week, but 2.5 of that 5 came in one run. Okay, you're gonna be all right, right? So I just want to like say that, because even 7 to 9, you know, some of my biggest, I rarely broke 8 hours in my biggest ultra cycles, barely, and only on select weeks, mostly because my body couldn't handle the volume during the week, and then I'd hit a big long run on the weekend. I couldn't run more than that, right? So just wanted to like pay service to those humans who are like, I'm still not gonna run 7 to 9 hours a week. I got a job and 6 kids, and I got so much stuff to do. Like, where am I going to find the time during the week? So,
yeah, that's a lot of training. And I'm going to refer all of us back to what I said previously, which is completion versus competition. That sounds better. It rhymes. But are you completing or competing?
Yeah, completion.
Completion. Yeah. If you're looking to can you complete any of these distances decently well off four hours of running a week? Of course, absolutely. But this is the series of how to run your best. And even though this is how to run your best everything all at once, and we've acknowledged that you can't run your very, very best on everything at once, we want to be pretty darn close to it. And that requires volume. Because I can't responsibly tell you that you're ready for a 50 miler off less than 7 hours of running per week. Can you? Maybe? Sure. But I can't guarantee it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to. So while we don't push for volume, we're not mileage monsters. A 50-mile race is a 50-mile race. And that last mile of the 5K comes down to, did you do enough? Not did you do fast enough, did you do enough? Mm-hmm. And even though that question is always no, unless you're injured, we're just not going to tell you to do less than that. But can you complete it off much less? Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we need to keep reiterating that through these episodes, right? Because I don't want people out there feeling like a failure mm-hmm. listening to us being like, I'm so far off the mark. Well, that's you and everybody else, buddy, are so far off the mark in general to doing your absolute best. That is sustainable. Yeah. You said do what makes you happy. Do what you can sustainably continue for weeks and months and potentially years. And for everybody, it's not 9 hours of training a week.
No, it's not. My first 50K, Kirk. I averaged 60 miles a week for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
60 miles a week. If you take my quality work plus my really dogging it long, easy recovery work, I probably averaged out to 8 minute miles throughout that time. How much time does that take? 60 miles. Let's say I was running 6 days per week. That's averaging 10 miles a day. That's an hour 20 a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's barely 7 to 9 hours in that range. You know, I'm not getting towards nine. And I felt like I was confident enough to attack a 50K. And I did, and I came up 3 miles short. And I also ran, 4:25 in the mile? Like, I did this. I ran a good mile for me and a good 50K for me. You know, 4:12 in the 50K, 4:25 in a mile. For the average man, that's pretty respectable running.
Wasn't that only weeks apart?
It's like 10 days apart.
Maybe 10, 10 days. So that's, yeah. I mean, case in point, 9 or 10 days. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of you listening that are much faster than that. That's fine. There's a bunch of you who are much, much slower. That's fine. It just shows that I was running an hour to an hour 20 a day, and I was able to feel confident from the mile to the 50K. And the 50K had 4,000 plus feet of vert, so it wasn't super flat. So a lot of my hours came up and down hills. Point is, you don't have to do 9 miles a week, but I also didn't hit my actual best in either one of those. Mm. So I was competitive in both, but I wasn't at my ceiling in either. And that's kind of the balancing act you have to play.
Yeah, it's actually fun. I mean, we don't need to get into over-racing syndrome because that happens to apply to those who want to do it all too. So let's leave that out of the conversation, but training for everything is kind of fun. And I use the word novel, but like shifting focus keeps people engaged throughout the year, having multiple things. You know, if you're all in on road marathoning and it's, I'm going to the roads for another threshold session, another road long run, the same over and over, it's easy to lose your steam. So sometimes like racing your best everything is like a really good long-term approach. I think it's why I'm 40 and still chasing things, to be honest, because I've moved, my target has moved throughout the years, much like yours has. I think there's a whole sustainability piece to the whole wanting to do everything conversation that, again, we don't need to get into, but this is actually a really good place to sit long-term, or having a focus one the first half of the year and then a different focus the second half. There's a lot of lip service we could pay to all that, so I like this topic for what it's worth.
Yeah, and we're getting long, so we have to wrap up. But I want to reiterate something you led with right at the start of this. If you got to a 10K race, and with a mile to go, you're next to someone, do you want him to be someone who was or wasn't doing mile-paced work each week in some capacity? Half mile to go, 400 to go. You don't want to find out that he's been running mile-paced workouts from time to time as well, and that he PR'd his mile once you get towards the end of the race. Conversely, if you're in a 5K or something shorter like that, and in the middle, you're not dropping a guy who you know has been hitting some real long runs and has run a decent half marathon or ultra recently, you know you're probably in trouble, because if you haven't burnt him out by now, his engine's going to hold up in the second half. And so the person you're racing against, if them being more well-rounded would scare you, That's almost all you need to know on should I do a little bit more well-rounded training. It's only going to help you in specific moments. When you need to be fast, you've got that stride. When you need to hang on, you've done your long grindy work. You're going to be adaptable to any race you run.
Moral of the story is stay in touch with both far ends of the spectrum. It's simple as that. Stay in touch with your fast twitch, sharp pointy end of the stick, and stay in touch with your dull, long run end of the stick, and make those two a priority. And then ideally it all meets in the middle. You can run the gamut of the race distances and terrain, and you should be ready to be happy with your performance. Anything else? Anything else to add to this one?
No. No, we've gone too long as is.
And I'm proud of, I don't know if I'm proud of you, Bracken, or I don't know how I feel, but we actually are recording this during the Boston Marathon. And if you guys know anything about Bracken, he loves watching live track, road, anything. And this is a sacrifice you are making for the running public, which is astounding. I can't believe we're recording right now. So I don't know what's going on in your life where this is where we found ourselves, but I don't know if I should be impressed or disappointed, I think is what I'm saying.
Both. Both. I'm both. Mostly depressed. The marathon distance is marathons probably the single most important race for me to watch live. Because so much investment happens on the will they, won't yep. they dilemma that if you know the results, like I don't want to suffer through 90 minutes in the middle of the race already knowing that it doesn't work out. Or, and that sounds bad as a fan of running, but it's the one distance I want to watch live. So because I didn't get to watch the start of this, I just wrote it off. And I'm going to try to avoid spoilers and then maybe do a long treadmill session this evening. It's not going to happen.
Treat yourself. Yeah, the race is wrapped up as we're speaking, I'm guessing. So, all right, folks. Well, thank you very much for listening. Hopefully you got something out of this series. If you have any other series ideas moving forward, Bracken and I will be brainstorming. But that's all we got for you today.
Thanks as always for listening, and we'll see you this weekend. If anything resonated with you on today's episode and you're curious about taking your training to the next level, check out therunningpublic.com, where we have a training plan to fit your needs.